We've been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
Jets have some life.
It doesn't get any easier, and as the season moves on, road games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
Second goes in, shoots, scores! How about that?
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
That one came off Stahlberg. It's Schultz working it back in deep. Fresh from the bench, it's Crosby. Crosby on Kunitz, it shoots!
Chris Kunitz, the hero for the Pittsburgh Penguins in double overtime of Game 7 of that Penguins-Senators series, doesn't get any more dramatic than that. And we now have our Stanley Cup final set, the Penguins and the Predators. It's going to be an all-yellow Stanley Cup final getting underway on Monday. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my regular conspirator, Ezra Ginsberg. Dave Manuk away from the program this week, so we're pleased to welcome Sean Assor back to the show. Of course, you heard Sean all winter long with us on NHL This Week. Sean, a pleasure to see you on this Saturday morning. Thanks for jumping in with us bright and early.
Oh, guys, happy to be back. This is a nice little trip down memory lane.
Yeah. A little bit better than some of those 10 p.m. shows that we used to do, although they were fun in their own right.
Good times, yeah, they're fun.
Yeah, a little looser of an atmosphere exactly. When you're coming on air at 10 p.m. after a Moose game or whatever it might be, you know, in the middle of February. But it is a beautiful late May Saturday morning here in Winnipeg. We encourage you to join the show. Best way to do that, that's via Twitter, @IllegalCurve. If you are more inclined to use Facebook, you can go ahead and do that. Just search for us there. We're also on Instagram. I don't think we're on Snapchat or Reddit or any of those other social media channels that I don't really understand how they work.
We are on Etsy, though.
Are we on Etsy?
Yeah.
Your hand making some Illegal Curve merchandise?
Yeah, I'm knitting toques
on Etsy. Oh, that's
Etsy.
Good.
Etsy on Etsy.
Yeah, Etsy on Etsy. Yeah, there you go. Actually, I think that would be a great show. You can do a show where you review different people's Etsy sites and call it Etsy on Etsy.
That's right. By the way, Drew.
Yes.
How was your May long weekend? We didn't have a show last week because
we didn't. The World Hockey Championships, yeah. They got in our way a little bit, but that's okay. It was a little rainy, as everybody knows, but I had some quality time with the family, which was probably disappointing for Laura. She probably was sick of me by that point in time. But Aaron seems to still have been happy to have me around for a little while longer.
I got to say, it's weird when you do the show every Saturday. We've never had a May long off before.
Usually we're able to work in and around the World Hockey Championships and everything else. But with it being the long weekend, we were happy to take a week off and refresh and recharge. And you were out at the lake. You had a good time out at the lake.
Yeah, I got a little sleep in, which was nice because we never get to sleep in on Saturdays, right? So, it was awesome. Unfortunately, Canada couldn't bring home the gold medal, but Sweden was a good team too.
Yeah.
But
when it comes to a shootout, you can't really worry too much about it.
I got to say, I missed it.
Missed the show?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I couldn't tell if you were saying you missed the finals of the World Hockey Championships or you missed the show.
No, I missed doing the show. It was nice to have a week off, but
well, you're back.
There's lots of hockey to talk about.
There's lots
ready
of hockey
to go.
To talk
Memorial
about.
Cup, yeah. Stanley Cup final.
We've got lots to talk about. Jets a little bit in and around there. Not a ton going on in Jets land as fans of the team know right now. Sort of a holding pattern, I think. But once the Cup final ends in a couple weeks, I think it's going to be a crazy sort of two-week period from right after the Cup Finals, right through the NHL Draft. Of course, as you'll be down in Chicago with Dave broadcasting alongside Huss and the rest of the team down there for the NHL Draft in Chicago.
Yeah, Paulie Edmonds is going to be down there too.
There you go. Paulie's never traveled with you before. I'm not sure he knows what he's in store for.
Well, I've got the CPAP machine now, so.
And we're thankful for that.
Even though I don't think we're going to be sleeping in the same room. I think, Paul's going to get his own master suite.
But. Yeah, I believe he gets presidential suites, if I'm not mistaken, and you get somewhere in the dungeon, I believe. You're next to the boiler room. There's a cot that I think you get to share for 3 hours a night.
The janitorial Chinese closet. Food, yes. That's where I ordered the Chinese food, just like Elaine did.
There you go. Exactly right. Anyways, let's get right into it, starting with the Penguins and the Senators. Should make a note, though, that actually throughout the show, Sean last weekend had the pleasure of attending Michael Remus's bachelor party. So Sean is going to regale us with some stories from the bachelor party, at least those stories that are radio friendly. So if Remus is awake or somebody wants to text Remus, he can be aware that we're going to make fun of him for the next 3 hours in and around there.
So, Sean, it's going to be a lot of, you know, playing video games in your underwear, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be a lot of just underwear Mario Party showdowns.
Oh, boy. It sounds like a wild and crazy bachelor party if there ever was one. Let's get into it with the Penguins and the Senators. Game 7, we played the audio of Chris Kunitz right off the top there in double overtime. You know, this series was getting a lot of flack, I think. And people were saying, the Senators are boring, the Senators are boring. And it's true, they don't play the, you know, the most upbeat style, and they are certainly defensive first, and they're cautious. But anybody who thinks that Game 7 was boring, when it's 1-1 going into the third period, and then the Penguins score on that controversial power play, and the Senators come right back, and then it goes to double overtime, I mean, that's all you can ever ask for from a Game 7 and from a, you know, a deciding game like that.
Not only was the Game 7 of this series one of the most exciting games that we've seen in recent memory in the playoffs, I thought that the last 5 games of this series were exciting, right? Because it was really a best-of-3 Stanley Cup final after Pittsburgh tied it up. Ottawa was leading the series, right? So Ottawa really put a scare into the Pittsburgh Penguins, and it was really that third game where Marc-Andre Fleury obviously had the bad game, and then Matt Murray comes in Game 4, like you predicted, by
the way. Thank you. I was going to see if you're going to give me some props on that or not.
Hey, no, but if you go back and you play the audio, I said that, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury was going... I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury had a shutout in Game 2.
I know.
Right? So, I mean, the unexpected happened. Matt Murray comes back. Because let's be honest, Marc-Andre Fleury had just the one bad game. I mean, it was one bad game. And give Mike Sullivan a lot of credit. And I don't think Mike Sullivan, guys, gets enough credit sometimes for how good of a coach he is. By the way, this Stanley Cup final is going to be the first time where we see two American-born head coaches, which is pretty interesting because you would have thought that that's happened before.
Mike Sullivan for the Penguins, of course. Yeah. Peter Laviolette for the Predators. Both of them, I think, are Massachusetts boys. I think that's where they got their start in the hockey world up in Massachusetts there.
But, Drew, give Mike Sullivan a lot of credit for starting Matt Murray in Game 4. He makes the right decision. Matt Murray plays really well in that game, picks up the win, and he plays really well throughout the series. And give him a lot of credit for putting Connor Sheary back into the lineup. He was a healthy scratch in Games 5 and 6. Mm-hmm. Ends up playing on the top line with Sidney Crosby and Chris Kunitz, right? So I don't think Mike Sullivan sometimes gets enough credit for some of the in-game, in-series moves that he makes. And certainly in this series, I mean, Ottawa had no reason taking this series to 7 games. Let's be honest. Game 6, it should have been over there. Craig Anderson makes 45 saves. Should have got the first star. I don't know how he got the third star in that game. Yeah. But anyways, he stole game.
He got the first star of the series. I mean, let's be honest. Even though they lost, if this had been the Stanley Cup final, you could certainly have made the argument that he would have been a Conn Smythe candidate.
I think it's Carlson or Anderson. I don't even think it's close. And I would probably give the edge to Anderson the way he played against Pittsburgh. But give them a lot of credit, right? Mm-hmm. We talked about it when we were previewing the series on the show 2 weeks ago, that they needed to keep these games low scoring, with the exception of two of the games. The games that the Senators won were all low scoring, right?
Game three and then it was again Game 5. Those were the two blowouts in the series.
Right. So give them a lot of credit, Dre. I mean, they're very well coached with Guy Boucher. They're excellent in goal with Craig Anderson. Erik Karlsson, we know he was fighting an injury, but he was really good in the series. And they managed to fight, scratch, and claw their way to a 7th game. And they almost, you know, pulled off the unexpected.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to pigeonhole what an amazing Game 7 to play in the Cup Finals would look like, I would just say go watch that game. Mm-hmm. There was everything. A great goaltending battle, really nice goals, timely offense. I mean, Pittsburgh scores, you're thinking, okay, how can Ottawa respond? Ottawa scores right away.
20 both seconds
times.
Later.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mark Stone, and like that pass by Carlson and that Stone goal was so nice. Mm-hmm. And I like what you said, Ezzy, about Connor Sheary being inserted back into the lineup. This is a guy that's proved he can play. You know, an undersized, skill guy that, you know, has found his niche alongside Sidney Crosby, amongst many other players throughout Crosby's career. But it's a guy that was having some trouble gaining success in the playoffs. Like you said, gets reinserted back into the lineup. Actually starts on the line with Kunitz and Matt Cullen down the middle. And then halfway through that game, Mike Sullivan switches that up, puts Crosby back with Kunitz and Sheary. And how fitting is it that despite all the role players that we've seen Crosby play with this year, the Russ, the Gensels, the Shearys, it's Crosby to Kunitz that seals the series. And I thought it was so appropriate. It was as if, you know, they make that line change and Crosby takes advantage of the third pairing where it's Chris Weidman dealing with him down low and Crosby shakes him off like he's a shake and bake package. Like it was absolutely nothing. Finds Kunitz in the high slot, which I'm sure he knew where his old teammate would be stationed. And Kunitz lets go. They call it a knuckler, but
he didn't get all the shot.
But he puts it top corner. Anderson kind of is left with his arms above his head, kind of going, this
and
is it?
And Pajot's providing a screen on the play, which is, I mean, Pajot is caught in no man's land almost. He has to either be closer to Kunitz or out of the way to some degree. And it's just, I mean, that's what happens when you get to double overtime, is that you're just a little imprecise.
Because every mistake is amplified.
Sure, and you're not as sharp as you are at the start of the game. You're not even as sharp as you are at the start of an overtime. And you just, you know, a small mistake like that, and the puck just as easily could have fluttered, you know, harmlessly, you know, wide of the net or harmlessly off of Craig Anderson's, you know, big logo there. Instead, it happens to go top corner, and the Penguins advance to the Stanley Cup Final. I mean, I think the better team in the series clearly won.
I agree. I mean, the Senators feel that way too.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Senators know that on paper they you know that the only reason they got to seven games is because of the heroic performances of Craig Anderson. So this is going to be a more competitive Cup Final as a result, I think. But you know, it still doesn't take anything away from the Senators and their tremendous performance in the course of the seven game series.
And I loved seeing Crosby grab the Prince of Wales Trophy. They did it last time they won the Cup, but what was interesting about that was when they lined up for the picture with Kunitz and Malkin, Crosby made Malkin and Kunitz switch spots because I believe that is where they took the picture the last time they won the Cup. So it's so interesting, the little intricacies and, I guess, nuances of Sidney Crosby's OCD, would you call it, or superstitions. And you love seeing these things emerge, like, just little by little. It's so crazy.
And guys, you have to give Ottawa, again, credit just for getting this series to seven games, right?
And Craig Anderson was unbelievable.
He was unbelievable. I mean, Matt Murray, you could argue, outplayed him in those final four games, but Craig Anderson certainly in game six stole that game. Matt Murray's numbers were incredible, Drew, in those four games.
Well, that's why I didn't think it was so unbelievable that the Penguins would go to Matt Murray, unless they were just absolutely destroying this end.
It was one bad game, right?
I know. But they also know, I think, deep down, that Matt Murray's the better goaltender than Marc-Andre Fleury. So that one bad game, I think they feared might mushroom into something more. And especially when you're into the Eastern Conference Finals, you can't afford a goalie to have more than one bad game.
And we never know, we'll never know, I should say, if Marc-Andre Fleury comes back for game four and if he has a good game, right?
Sure.
We just will never know. But no, you were right. I mean, you raised the possibility of Matt Murray coming back in the playoffs. And I said wrongly that I thought he'd have to have a couple of bad games, certainly a really bad game. And he was really bad in that game. But again, Mike Sullivan made the right decision.
They went to the better of the two goalies.
What's amazing, Drew, is that Matt Murray can win the Stanley Cup twice as a rookie.
Yeah, he's still considered technically a rookie this season.
Point.
Yeah, I think that would be a barroom trivia contest you could win at that point in time.
I thought it was really fitting, guys, that Chris Kunitz scored the series-winning goal, and he picked up two goals in that game. Because if you remember, Chris Kunitz was not very good in the first couple of rounds. He was pretty much a non-factor against Washington and Columbus. He only had two or three points, I think, in the first couple of rounds. But Chris Kunitz is a guy, a former 30-goal guy. He's played with Crosby many years, played with Crosby at the 2014 Sochi Olympics. And, you know, they didn't have Patrick Hornqvist in the lineup, but it was Kunitz and Justin Schultz who got all of the goals for Pittsburgh, right? Justin Schultz had missed the previous four games, right? So even though the Pittsburgh Penguins are top-heavy and you get a lot of your offense from Crosby and Malkin, I mean, other players have emerged. It was Jake Gensel in the first couple of rounds. It was Chris Kunitz and Justin Schultz in Game 7. So, you know, give Pittsburgh a lot of credit. You know, they could have easily lost this series, even though I think they had no reason to fear the Ottawa Senators. The Ottawa Senators kept these games low scoring, and Craig Anderson was unbelievable. I thought this series would be over in six, and it should have been. But again, you know, Anderson makes 45 saves. He stands on his head, and it was a classic Game 7.
It was a classic Game 7. Their opponents in the Stanley Cup Final are going to be the Nashville Predators. When we come back, we'll touch on the Predators-Ducks Western Conference Final. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 12.
Oh.
by Sissons. Albert back across for Sissons, a shot. He scores! Lindholm back to get it. Hits by Forsberg. Albert with two backhand shots. They score! Into the Dutch zone. Tried to put a move on Fowler. Yarkov with the punch. Slides it across. Score! Sissons!
Sometimes you need an opportunity to play in situations to show what you've got. Colton Sissons has done that tonight.
Not what I would describe as a household name. He is now one in Nashville, Colton Sissons.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned he's not a household name. Usually you find a pair of Sissons in your drawer at home.
I was going to say, don't run with Sissons.
Both of you get out. Both of you get out. Get out right now. I got the show for the next couple hours. Both of you leave immediately. Anyways, Colton Sissons, game six, the hero, quote unquote. A hat trick for the Nashville Predators. No Ryan Johansson, no problem for the Preds as they defeat the Ducks. In six games, they win game six by a score of 6-3. It was a 2-2 series. Then we find out that Johansson goes out. The Predators win the next two, and they take the series in six games. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the show brought to you by Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. If you're looking for a place, you know, to swing the sticks on this beautiful Saturday morning, my strong suggestion, the Illegal Curve stamp of approval goes to Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. You can check them out, bellacres.com. Some great opportunities to hit the sticks. The course is in fantastic shape. Check it out, Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, bellacres.com. So, gents, when Ryan Johansson went out after game four, we heard that he had the injury. He needed immediate surgery, out for the remainder of the playoffs. I think a lot of people at that point in time would have said, well, this Predator story has been a good story, but without Ryan Johansson, they're not going to be able to handle the Anaheim Ducks. Lo and behold, they win Game 5 in Anaheim, a huge victory for the Ducks, and then they're unbeatable on home ice. The Predators' home ice advantage is probably one of the few home ice advantages that still exists in professional sports. Right now, you go to Nashville, you just can't expect to win a game there.
The Predators were actually more impressive in Game 5 than they were in Game 6. If you watch that game, I mean, Anaheim was all over the Nashville Predators, badly outshooting them in both of the first two periods, and Pekka-Rinne was the difference. And, you know, you look at the score at 6-3 and you think it was a blowout for the Nashville Predators, and there was obviously an empty net goal there. If not, was there one or two empty net goals? I forget. But early on in that game, I mean, you could see that the Anaheim Ducks were clearly taking advantage of the lack of Ryan Johansson and Mike Fisher in the lineup. And give Colton Sissons a lot of credit. I mean, Colton Sissons, people forget, was a second-round draft pick in 2012, and he's a guy that had a couple of really good seasons with the Milwaukee Admirals. I think he had 25 goals one year with the Milwaukee Admirals. So this isn't, a fourth-line grinder. This is a guy that has some offensive upside, right? Mm-hmm. So give Sissons a lot of credit there. And, you know, we played the clip at the top of the segment. Pontus Auberg was not really a factor, you know, in the first couple rounds of the playoffs for the Nashville Predators. I don't believe he played against the St. Louis Blues, if I'm not mistaken. And then, you know, he has a really good Game 5 and Game 6, right? So the Nashville Predators do have a lot of depth. A lot of the focus, Drew, has been on the Predators' top 4D of P.K. Subban, Roman Josi, Matthias Ekholm, and Ryan Ellis. But the Nashville
Predators, with Subban maybe being the fourth of those that you just mentioned in terms of if you had a pecking order.
Well, I think Roman Josi is the best defenseman out of the four, and then I think you really have maybe three number twos. Mm-hmm. I really don't think that, you know, I would probably put P.K. Subban as their second best defenseman behind Josi, but really Ryan Ellis has stepped up big time in the playoffs. But again, I mean, that game six, I mean, the Anaheim Ducks, I would say of those six games, the Anaheim Ducks probably were the better team in at least half of those games, right? So this series could have easily gone to seven games, Sean. And, you know, of course, if Ryan Johansson is in the lineup, I think it's a different outcome. And I think against the Pittsburgh Penguins in the Stanley Cup final, they're really going to miss Ryan Johansson.
You know, the thing about, you talked about Pekka-Rinne, and the last time we talked about Craig Anderson and we talked about Matt Murray and the importance of goaltending, the Anaheim Ducks just didn't get the goaltending they needed. I mean, John Gibson was, I would describe him as probably average in the first.
Well, hold on a second. I mean, Jonathan Bernier was awful in game
six. That's what I was going to say.
I mean, again, I think Jonathan
Bernier cost himself a lot of money.
Well, Sure.
Because he was good in the regular season. Mm-hmm, he had a very good regular season.
And that's what I was going to say, right, guys? I mean, Jonathan Bernier came in for John Gibson during the regular season when John Gibson was injured, and Bernier was great. But let's be honest. I mean, he comes in without any previous starting experience in the playoffs, and he was awful.
Yeah, I mean, you guys kind of laid it out perfectly. Jonathan Bernier had an incredible regular season serving as a very capable backup to John Gibson, that when John Gibson did go down in the postseason, I'm sure the Anaheim Ducks were a bit, I don't want to say calm, but they were more confident in their goaltending situation, that they have a capable backup to come in and provide the necessary goaltending that they're used to. And when that doesn't happen, that can rattle a team real easily, and that could change your perspective on how you play the game. If you're an offensively forward team like Anaheim usually is, and you don't get the goaltending, I mean, we saw it in Winnipeg, when you don't get the goaltending, sometimes it changes your perspective on the way you play, and you can get into your own head a little bit more. Maybe I don't push forward. Maybe I got to stay back a little bit. And I think that really confused the Anaheim Ducks as to what their style should be moving forward once they realized we may not have the goaltending we need in this game. And I think Nashville took full advantage of that.
And I think also, in addition to Anaheim not getting the goaltending, especially in Game 6, I thought at parts of this series, Anaheim was too preoccupied with the rough stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And you saw that in Game 6 with Nick Ritchie and the boarding penalty, the game misconduct. Anaheim actually killed off that five-minute major. Nashville didn't score on that five-minute major, but, I mean, let's be honest, guys. I mean, that was a really stupid play by Nick Ritchie. Yeah. Earlier in the series, Nick Ritchie also got into some trouble, right? So, I mean, I thought at times guys like Ryan Kessler and Corey Perry were running around a little bit too much and really letting that be a distraction, because I think if you look at you compare these two teams, I think we'd give the advantage to Nashville on defense and in goal, but Anaheim has more depth. But again, you can't underestimate, or I guess understate, in Game 6, no Rickard Rakell and no Patrick Eves.
Sure.
Right? So if Anaheim has Rakell and Eves.
You can bind them into one player now.
I could say the same thing about Nashville. If they had Ryan Johansson and Mike Fisher, they probably would have had a better game too, right? But, I mean, give the Predators a lot of credit. I mean, they are the better team. But I think this series, I'm just saying that I think this series was a lot closer than some people are giving it credit for.
Yeah, no, I agree with you that it was a closer series than you know. Sure, the Eastern Conference one went seven, and this one only went six. So you might say that the Predators were a better, you know, a significantly better team than the Ducks, but I don't think that was the case. But I think you make a very good point. Corey Perry and Ryan Kessler, and I know that's the way they play, especially Ryan Kessler. And Corey Perry is, you know, more sort of he picks and chooses his spots as to when to be a dirty and cheap player, more than Kessler does, who is just always in your face from the time the puck's dropped. But when they needed their veterans to step up and really take on a leadership mantle and to impose their will on a weakened opponent without their number one center, Kessler and Perry didn't do it. They just couldn't take advantage of that. Getzlaf was fantastic all playoffs long.
Yeah.
Ryan Getzlaf was absolutely tremendous. But if he's looking for a supporting cast, and Rakell and Eves would have been a big part of that supporting cast, so they're out of the lineup. So you really need now to have Perry and Kessler step up, and they didn't do it.
Well, and that's just it, right? Ryan Kessler and Ryan Getzlaf didn't have any goals combined in the series, right? And those are your top
but
two
Getzlaf
centers.
But Getzlaf was still impactful.
Oh, no, Getzlaf was great. I mean, Getzlaf was Getzlaf. I think if Anaheim gets to the Stanley Cup Final, I don't think there's any question that Getzlaf is the Conn Smythe favorite for the Ducks, right? He was just unbelievable in that second-round series against the Oilers specifically. Mm-hmm. That was his best round. But, I mean, give the Ducks a lot of credit. I mean, we've talked about it. I mean, you go back to those Chicago Blackhawks teams that won those Stanley Cups with Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook, Nicholas Jalmerson, Johnny Oduya. I mean, this group of defensemen with Subban, Josi, Ekholm, and Ellis, I think this group of defensemen is just as good, if not better, than those Blackhawks groups that they had when they were winning their three Stanley Cups. They have shut down every single team that they've played. They absolutely neutralized the Chicago Blackhawks, just swept them aside with that broom.
They just snowballed right over them.
With the exception of, you know, a couple good games from Vladimir Tarasenko, and, you know, Alex Steen had a decent playoffs.
Yeah,
Jaden Schwartz.
You never thought
they shut those guys down.
Well, you never thought that the Blues were really in contention to win that series.
No, and we talked about that. I mean, they shut down Getzlaf for the most part. Mm-hmm. I mean, as much as you can. Shut down Kessler. Rakell was injured. Silverberg had a good series, but they shut him down most of the games. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there wasn't really at any point in the series where Anaheim had you know, one or two players that were really thriving offensively, right? And that's because Pekka Rinne's an all-world goaltender, and Nashville's top 4D is just as good as anybody's.
Which is, I mean, it's not like Anaheim has a no-name defense. They have a very good defense as well. They just, you know, they weren't able to perform to the same level that the Predators' defense was able to perform to. And I think a fair portion of that does have to do with the goaltending. Giving up 6 goals in that last game, I mean, Jonathan Bernier couldn't stop a beach ball in Game 6. If he makes, I mean, if he brings an A-level quality to that game, the Ducks probably win that game, and it goes back to Game 7 in Anaheim.
And then who knows what happens?
And then it's a toss up. When you're into a one game series like that, it's a toss up at that point in time. Jonathan Bernier you don't want to say he let down his teammates because that might be a little harsh. He just didn't perform when the spotlight was the brightest. This is a guy who, probably given the track record of his regular season, thought he played himself into contention for a number one job somewhere in the league. Now I don't think anybody can look at that performance in Game 6 and say this is a guy who deserves big money or deserves to be in the conversation to be a number one goalie.
And his defense, guys, I mean, he comes in Game 6. The Ducks are facing elimination. It's not the easiest situation to come into,
it's
right?
Not.
But you're right. I mean, he's paid to stop the puck, and he wasn't good. So I can't argue with you there. But, you know, I wouldn't put it all on Jonathan Bernier because the Predators did play very well in that Game 6, even though I think, you know, the score was flattering to them.
And you want to talk about defense. Randy Carlyle come out yesterday, the Anaheim Ducks exit interviews. Hampus Lindholm and Sammy Vatanen both dealing with significant shoulder injuries, both going to require surgery.
Torn labrums for both of them.
So you want to talk about the support that maybe Bernier had in front of him not being 100% as opposed to Pekka Rinne, who has the most elite decor in front of him right now. Mm-hmm. I mean,
And a healthy one at that.
That's
the thing. A very fair point, Sean. And we'll actually talk about the impact of those injuries on the Ducks. We'll do that in the third hour of this morning's program. When we come back, the Memorial Cup final is set. It's an all OHL battle between the Windsor Spitfires and the Erie Otters. Terry Koshin of the Toronto Sun is covering it. He joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Man on my far left is Sean Assor. The man in the middle is Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We head out to Windsor, Ontario, where the Memorial Cup final is now set. The Erie Otters defeated the St. John Sea Dogs last night. It's now the Erie Otters against the Windsor Spitfires, the host team. Terry Koshin of the Toronto Sun has been covering the tournament. He joins us now. Terry, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Doing very well, Terry. Been a hell of a tournament so far. Some very interesting battles. Last night, it was the semifinal between the Erie Otters and the St. John Sea Dogs. The Otters are able to take the game last night, and now we head into the all-OHL final between the powerhouse offensively inclined Erie Otters against the best goaltender in the tournament so far, Michael DiPietro of the Windsor Spitfires. You know, when you look at this tournament, is that really it? Is it sort of come down to the offense of the Otters against the defense of the Spitfires tomorrow evening?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I know that Windsor's going to have the backing of the home crowd and everything, guys. I think finally we're going to see a full building at this tournament because we haven't come close to that this week, which has been one of the downsides. But, yeah, I think you're right on that kind of matchup. I still think, though, the Erie's the better team. I would pick Erie to win. Just through and through, you know, they're solid. And there were some questions about their goaltender, Troy Timpano, but he was better last night. St. John came to play, unlike the evening that Windsor beat them 12-5. So I think it should be a hell of a game tomorrow night. And it's been a bit of an up-and-down week, to be quite honest. I've covered several of these in the past, and I can't remember a tournament that had so many lopsided games. And even some of the closer games where you kind of had a feeling early on that the team that would go on to win did win. But tomorrow night, I think it sets up quite nicely for organizers and for fan interest and all that sort of thing.
Terry, watching the Memorial Cup the last week, is there any NHL general manager more excited than Tampa Bay general manager Steve Yzerman? Anthony Cirelli, Taylor Radish, Eric Chernak on the Erie Otters, Matthew Joseph was on the St. John Sea Dogs, and all four of these players have been really good so far this week.
Yeah, they have, and you know, you could. It's going to be interesting. You would sit here today and project that all will play for the Tampa Bay Lightning one day, and probably not far off. But you know, we'll see how things shake out. But certainly, you know, a guy like Taylor Radish, I mean, he's leading the tournament right now with 11 points, and just an all-around good forward. You know, he had a great winter, of course, and playing for Canada like he did and all this sort of thing. And he's just, you know, top to bottom, heck of a prospect for them. You know, big winger, moves well, all this sort of thing. Got a hell of a shot. Even the goal he scored last night that didn't count, we saw what kind of a shot he has. But overall, yeah, Tampa, the pipeline here is good. There's no doubt about it. And obviously, even though this isn't the only group of prospects they have, but when all of them are playing on this stage, it's so important. I was talking to Tim Bernhardt with Arizona yesterday about this. And, you know, is it a short week? Yes, it is. For all intents and purposes, it's quick and all that. But the fact that these kids are here, no matter who they are, you know, a prospect of, they're going to learn a lot in this week about themselves, about where they have to go. And Tampa, for a bunch of these guys to do it all at once, I think there's no downside to it at all.
Terry,
Steve Yzerman has to be excited about it.
Sorry, Terry. Speaking of Taylor Radish, his brother Darren Radish was the defenseman of the year in the Ontario Hockey League. He picked up a really nice goal last night against the St. John Sea Dogs. Is it safe to say that he's earned himself an NHL contract because he's undrafted?
Yeah, he has. I mean, well, it's just a matter of where. And I guess the thing to do with him is, you know, take a look at some of the teams that across the NHL that perhaps right now are a little defenseman prospect challenged, if you will, at the American Hockey League level. That's where he's headed. I mean, he's certainly not going to step into the National Hockey League. And, you know, I don't think you look at him and say, okay, he's one of these guys that everyone has just missed to this point. People progress differently, and for Darren Radish, it's come a little later than others. I would be shocked if there's not some sort of contract for him, guys, in the next few weeks out of this, certainly before the season starts. But, you know, to his credit, that hasn't weighed on him negatively here. Again, you know, 7 points for the Otters and doing a lot of good things. That goal he scored last night, I mean, it's just a bizarre sequence that a defenseman can make a play like that. Not only to beat out a nice thing, but then to make the move that he did back to score the actual goal. If you're looking for a really solid final addition, it couldn't have gone much better for Darren Radish this week.
Terry, watching last night's game between Erie St. John's and just watching the tournament in general, you hear a lot about Joe Valeno, you know, granted the exceptional status, the forward from St. John's. Watching this guy and just the way he's able to move and handle the puck at such a young age, is this guy really cementing himself right now as a top prospect entering the 2018 draft?
I think so. I've been impressed with him this week and the other kid, Gabe Vilardi, who I know is going to be a top pick in about a month. Valeno, yeah, definitely. You know, finished with 3 goals and 1 assist. And again, you know, it's more of a thing where we say for the real junior 19-year-old tournament, that sort of thing. And those are the guys you expect to dominate. And this one, maybe not so much. But even if you're a highly rated prospect, especially for the draft year away, you don't necessarily expect him to come in and do the things that he did. But he was noticeable on a lot of his shifts, guys, in the offensive zone. Just like a lot of the things he did, you know, you don't watch this guy. There are some you say, okay, well, you can see the age in him. I didn't necessarily see that with Joe Valeno, the way he played the game. And Gabe Vilardi, same thing. I mean, this guy has just been his work down low for someone who is still at this point just a draft prospect has been excellent. And you talk to Gabe Vilardi after games and this sort of thing, and he doesn't come across as somebody who is still at that age where he has not yet been drafted. But he's going to be a good hockey player in the National Hockey League. He's big. He's dynamic. Like I say, his work ethic from the hash marks in is excellent. And hasn't scored, but he's picked up 5 assists. But both of them, I mean, yeah, one guy, like I say, should be a top five in Buffalo, and sorry, in Chicago. And then Valeno next year, you know, he's going to challenge for that number one spot for sure. And again, these things I don't think necessarily can hurt prospects, guys, Memorial Cup, but it's encouraging for both Windsor and St. John to see these two prospects play as well as they have.
Terry Koshan is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Terry is covering the Memorial Cup. The final between the Windsor Spitfires and the Erie Otters goes tomorrow evening in Windsor. Terry, unfortunately, there is you mentioned the lopsided scores in this tournament, and the Seattle Thunderbirds were the team that was the victim of that, getting outscored 18-3 in their three games, losers in all three games, of course, two of those three being blowouts, 7-0 and 7-1. Why were the Thunderbirds so outclassed in this tournament by their opposition?
Well, it's a good question, and it's something that is difficult to put the finger on because you don't see that a lot here. It's not often. You know, there's a lopsided score every so often, guys. And then the team comes back to bounces back. I mean, St. John this week is an excellent example. They get crushed by Erie one night. They beat up on Seattle the next. It just doesn't happen very often where, you know, a team is outclassed as much as the Thunderbirds were. I don't know if it was a matter of the travel that they had to endure to get here was certainly a lot more strenuous than any other club, you know, playing Regina in the final, the Western Hockey League, the kind of final that was. And I think, too, overall, there was just not the talent on that team that you might see, the depth that you see in other teams here. Would you expect that to hurt them to the extent that it did? I don't think so. They were playing through some things. Of course, Ethan Bear couldn't do what he wanted to do, trying to gut through a hand injury. That was a real negative impact for them. He wasn't the player that Western Hockey League fans have come to know, by no fault of his own. I know Matthew Barzal was expecting a lot more of himself. But it's just one of those things where I think, you know, you look at some of these tournaments and say, okay, well, for maybe for Windsor, for the first two games, a lot of really good things have happened for them. They played well. A lot of things have fallen into place. The other end of that spectrum is the Seattle Thunderbirds, and it just wasn't going for them this week. And it's difficult. But, you know, they have to remember, having gone home now, that they are Western Hockey League champions, and the St. John Sea Dogs are saying that the last night, too, guys. They're out of this now, but they have to know that they'll get rings from winning the Q, and they have to hold their heads high. But Seattle, it's not the team that the Dubs saw this year at all. But like I said, these things can happen sometimes.
Terry, this is a radio show in Winnipeg, of course, so we have to ask you about Windsor Spitfires defenseman Logan Stanley, 2016 first-round pick. He missed half of the OHL season with that right knee injury. He's been pretty good in the first three games for the Spitfires. How would you assess his play so far in the tournament?
Exactly that. I was talking to him the other day, and he was saying, you know, it was difficult for him to start because he's been out since, what, January? And, you know, I mean, it's one thing to come back from injury, guys, as you all know, in the middle of the season and that sort of thing. It's another to kind of try to hit the ground running against three clubs in the Memorial Cup who have just been through strenuous playoff runs. And I guess all the Spitfires have had to do it. But for Logan Stanley, it's been different. He said there was some rust to get through. He does feel good physically, though. I think he's looked really good. I mean, you can't miss the guy. I mean, dude, from the press box, it's just the size of the kid is kind of blows you away. And, you know, we see it afterwards too. You have your kids come in for the post-game interviews and all that. And then Logan Stanley walks in and it's like Zdeno Chara light, right? So I think for him, there's just a relief factor that he was able to get back and do this and play in some games before the end of the season and try to leave one good, you know, final impression with the Jets over the summer. And he's done that. You know, it's, again, it's, like I say, rust, getting through the rust was one thing, but he's been fine and part of a Windsor club that's just been great overall in their first two games.
Terry, you watch the Erie Otters play, and anyone that loves the game of hockey sees a guy like Alex DeBrincat touch the puck, and he just mesmerizes at his size and what he's able to do. I mean, he's playing with Dylan Strome. The two of them, their chemistry is unbelievable sometimes. You look at a guy like with his size and his skill package, is this a guy that may have to fine-tune his game in the minors for a little while, or you think this guy can go in and crack the Blackhawks roster at his first or second opportunity?
Well, I think he's going to have a shot. I really do. I mean, we're seeing this type of player make an impact more and more now in the National Hockey League. And again, I don't know if you're going to find many as small as DeBrincat. I mean, my point of reference here in Toronto, guys, would be Mitch Marner, of course. And, you know, we look at Marner when he comes off the ice, he's not wearing his equipment. He's a pretty slight guy. Well, for DeBrincat, the issue is the height, but it doesn't matter. It hasn't mattered a lick in the Ontario Hockey League, of course, just in filling the net. Like he was born to do it, and you know, I think he'll have a legitimate opportunity to make the Hawks roster out of camp next year. Now, the thing is, that would then imply that he's going to have an impact right away, mm-hmm. and I just think it goes back to the bigger picture now, and there's more of a place for these guys in the game. And you know, Patrick Kane was leading that charge several years ago. We've all seen what he's done. He'll never be confused with the biggest hockey player on the ice. But DeBrincat's ability, the thing that I'm going to be interested to see with him is what he's done so well at the junior level is, I don't know if there's a player who can find holes like he does and anticipate them and get in them. And then when he's there to finish the play and put the puck in the net, those types of things won't open up as quickly or as often in the NHL. That's all there is to it. So if there's an adjustment that he has to make, it'll be perhaps having to be even quicker. Then do you say, okay, well, is he better off learning that in the American Hockey League? Perhaps. But I just think, given right now what he's able to do, I think he'll have a legitimate shot to turn some heads in camp in the fall.
Terry, we'll let you go on this last question. You mentioned at the outset of the interview about the disappointing crowds thus far in the Memorial Cup. I know that prior to the tournament starting, there was a lot of talk about just how expensive tickets were for the tournament. Has the Canadian Hockey League maybe choked the Golden Goose finally? Is it now time for them to recalibrate the pricing structure for this tournament going forward?
There's no question. I mean, it was $75 during the week for a game that didn't involve Windsor for a single ticket, $90 for a game that did, I believe. And I think there was some sort of code you could enter to get something marked off. But, I go back to what Danny Flynn had said at one point this week. You know, he's been at this tournament for years on end and a few decades now. He's made appearances and sort of said to him, what's the biggest difference in the Memorial Cup? And he didn't talk about the hockey or anything. He just said simply, it's a big business now. Back in the day, it wasn't. And I think that's one thing that it's a balancing act for the Canadian Hockey League to walk now. It is a big business. You see, you know, the way that Sportsnet gives it the treatment that it does, a lot of media here. But on the other hand, it is teenagers playing hockey, and there's no damn way you should be paying $75 or $90 or whatever it is, even for the final tomorrow night, to be coming and watching them do this. And it's a disappointment. I mean, it's not like this is ranked as a 10,000-seat rink where they've been getting 8,000 people. It's seat 6,500 for hockey. And I'm sure you guys have seen on TV the rows of empty seats. It's just not a good look. It's disappointing. And, they've got to come back to this now and figure out where they go from here. And, you know, I know they want to make as much money at this as possible, but you just can't charge those ticket prices. I don't care where this tournament is. It's obscene, to be quite honest.
Well, Terry, the Mem Cup is in Regina next year, so maybe they reduce those ticket prices, knowing that there's going to be some cost-conscious Winnipeggers making the drive there.
Well, I'll put in a good word for you guys.
Thank you, Terry. Terry Koshan with the Toronto Sun. He's covering the Memorial Cup in Windsor. The final goes tomorrow. Terry, appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks, buddy.
Okay, thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
We talked about the Eastern Conference Final. We talked about the West. We're going to talk about the Stanley Cup Final, previewing the Preds and the Penguins up next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
And 1290, TSN1290.ca.
For the first time in franchise history, the Nashville Predators are heading to the Stanley Cup Final.
Crosby flips the puck down the ice, and that'll do it. The Pittsburgh Penguins have won the 2016 Stanley Cup.
The Cup Final is set. The Penguins and the Predators. It gets underway on Monday in Pittsburgh. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Check out their new showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them Illegal Curve sent you. Maybe you have a Predators jersey or a Penguins jersey and you want to put that Stanley Cup patch right on the corner there. Keener Jerseys, they can take care of that for you. KeenerJerseys.com, 982 Portage Avenue. That's their showroom. So, gents, we talked about how both these teams got there. We now talk about how they're going to do while there, the Penguins and the Preds, Monday night in Pittsburgh. Can it's really a battle of the Predators' defense. Can they withstand the charge of the Penguins' forwards and the injuries on both sides? We know that the Preds are going to be without Ryan Johansson. Mike Fisher likely to check back into the lineup. He thinks he's getting close to being healthy.
He was skating again with the team.
He's
officially listed as questionable for game one.
Right, so questionable is questionable.
50-50.
We'll see. Yep. The Penguins' defense, it just looks like it's so banged up to me. I know that they were, I mean, Justin Schultz.
Yeah, but they're getting healthier.
Well, but are they, though? At this point in the season, if you're injured, can you really get healthy at this point?
Well, I mean, healthy in the sense that they're going to play, right?
Sure.
And look at Drew. I agree with you. And, you know, that's why a couple weeks back we were talking to Bill West of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review about Ron Hainsey, because Ron Hainsey's been playing 20, 22, 24 minutes. In Game 7 against the Ottawa Senators, he was over 30 minutes, and so was Brian Dumoulin.
Led the team, didn't he, in minutes?
I think he was either first or second. Ollie Matta was up there, too.
Insane.
But Hainsey was up there as far as playing the most minutes on defense for the Pittsburgh Penguins. But when you talk about, you know, Justin Schultz coming back, that was huge, Drew. And, you know, I thought they really missed Justin Schultz in game.
You ever think you'd be saying that about Justin Schultz?
Well, you know what? When Justin Schultz first came into the league, I really wasn't a fan of his game, and I think he struggled. But let's be honest, he was on some pretty bad Oilers teams, right?
Well, he came in as the savior, and that obviously wasn't what he was. That wasn't a role he was suited for.
But on a speed team like the Pittsburgh Penguins guys, an offensive first team, he fits right in, right? So Justin Schultz getting healthy is huge for this team. And, you know, Ron Hainsey and Brian Dumoulin at times has been the number one pair for this team, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Sean and I were talking off air. Ollie Matta has been very impressive for the Penguins. He also had some injury problems this year, and at times in the playoffs, you know, he's looked shaky. Mm-hmm. But I think he saved his best for last in the Ottawa Senators series. So, I mean, the Penguins certainly don't have the defense to compare with the Nashville Predators. I mean, Nashville Predators, we talked about it during the first segment. This group of defensemen, they're top four. And even Matt Irwin and Yannick Weber on that bottom pair, sure, they don't get a lot of credit, but that's a pretty solid third pair for the Nashville Predators. But
they get to play easy minutes.
Right. I mean, the Pittsburgh Penguins don't have a Roman Josi. They don't have a PK Subban. They don't have a Ryan Ellis. But Justin Schultz is an excellent defenseman. I think Trevor Daley also missed some time early in the playoffs. He was really good in that series against Ottawa, picked up a really big goal there. So, I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, the Nashville Predators, the big key for me is with no Ryan Johansson, who are you matching up against Sidney Crosby? Who are you matching up against Evgeny Malkin? Because Pittsburgh has the best 1-2 center punch in the entire league, maybe in history. And without Ryan Johansson, it totally changes the complexion of the series, because that line with Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, and Victor Arvidsson was completely dominant in the first round against Chicago and against St. Louis. And now, without Ryan Johansson, if Mike Fisher is healthy, he's the number one center. But right now, Colton Sissons is the number one center. And sure, he had a really good Game 6 versus the Ducks, but can he do it for an entire series?
Against Crosby and Malkin. It's a whole other level you're stepping up against, especially when it comes to the Cup Finals. Sean, is this a series where speed kills? Is this going to be one of the faster Stanley Cup Finals we've seen in a while? Just two teams that skate up and down the ice. We know that the Senators did everything in their power to sort of neutralize the Penguins' speed, because that's how they had to succeed. That's not the Predators' MO, isn't about sort of stopping somebody else from playing fast. The Predators also want to play a fast, up-tempo style. That's Peter Laviolette's MO as the head coach of the Predators.
Yeah, first I think we should say RIP to the 1-3-1. So long. Thanks for playing. It's been fun. Not really.
Yeah.
But yeah, you want to talk about speed. These are two teams that like to move the puck quickly. They don't like to really dilly-daddle. They get it to their forwards and they exit their zone. They get through the neutral zone and then they cycle down low and they work off the rush. And it's going to be a real fun series to watch with regards to offense. Sidney Crosby talked about it post-game after Game 7. He said, Nashville plays a more conducive style to what we're used to, a more run and gun, offensively forward. They don't have to worry about chipping it through the neutral zone. They can use their feet and their speed to their advantage and, you know, work off the rush and work the give-and-go plays, and they don't have to worry about that stifling four-man-at-the-blue-line kind of dilly.
You won't hear the words boring
exactly
coming out of being used to describe either of these two teams.
It's going to be a real handful for the Nashville Predators top four defensemen. I say that, and we talked about earlier in the show how amazing they've been at shutting down the top oppositions, well, this is the ultimate test for that those four.
And Sean, there's the chance that special teams factor in, but I wouldn't think special teams are going to factor in as much in the series. When you're coming off of the series that we saw in the Eastern Conference Final and the Western Conference Final, even the Pittsburgh-Ottawa series at times became chippy, but these two teams are not physical teams, and so I think most of the series is going to be determined at 5-on-5, and when you talk about the Nashville Predators, at times in that series, Anaheim controlled the 5-on-5 play. Pittsburgh absolutely dominated the even-strength shot attempts and scoring chances against Ottawa, right? So I think that's going to be really a key for the Nashville Predators. You have to slow Pittsburgh down in the neutral zone. Ottawa did the same thing, but it's a different type of system. It's not the kind of sit back, have three guys at the blue line. Nashville likes to kind of force everything to the outside, make you dump the puck in, because then Pekka-Rinne is able to play the puck, get it up to that fast defense, right? So, I mean, Nashville, I think, is going to have a similar strategy to the Ottawa Senators in the sense that they're going to want to keep these games low scoring. Maybe not so much as the Senators-Penguins series, but, I mean, without Ryan Johansson, you've lost a significant offensive weapon. And that's not to say that they don't have other guys that can put the puck in the net. I mean, we talked about Philip Forsberg was very good against Anaheim, and Victor Arvidsson obviously has slowed down a little bit. He was really good earlier in the playoffs, but I mean, I think that a healthy Mike Fisher is key. I mean, we know that he's going to come back in the series, but if he misses the first game or the second game and Pittsburgh's already up 2-0 in the series, I think the series is going to be over early.
And you want to talk about possession numbers and the importance of Ryan Johansson. Think about defensive zone faceoffs with Pittsburgh.
Yeah, Johansson's a good faceoff
guy. He's a good faceoff man. Mike Fisher is a capable faceoff man. No one has more preset plays off the draw than the Pittsburgh Penguins. They've got so many weapons that they can adjust in so many areas that I think that if Nashville, pardon me, can't get their faceoff, their defensive zone faceoffs in order, I think they're going to be in a lot of trouble just right off the bat with regards to defensive zone draws.
What about the goaltending battle? You have two goalies. We know how good Pekka-Rinne has been in the playoffs. 941 save percentage, a 1.70 goals against average. Matt Murray, in only five games that he's played, a 946 save percentage and a 1.35 goals against average. Two great goalies competing against one another.
Drew, I would say the goaltending in the series is a wash. And if Marc-Andre Fleury was still playing for the Pittsburgh Penguins, starting, I should say, I would probably still say that it's a wash. And if you look at Pekka-Rinne's numbers, save percentage-wise, they've gone down each series. The series against the Anaheim Ducks was his worst series, but his numbers are still incredible, right? But Matt Murray was also really good in the four games that he played against the Ottawa Senators. So I don't think either team has the advantage in goal. I mean, you could say that Pekka-Rinne has the experience, but he's never been in a Stanley Cup final, right? Mm-hmm. Matt Murray won the Stanley Cup last year. Pekka-Rinne obviously has way more regular season games than Matt Murray. But for me, you're probably going to see these goaltenders trade off having good games, I would imagine. I still think this series is going to go six games. I mean, I do have Pittsburgh winning the series, Drew.
So hang on, let me just stop you right there. Your prediction is Pittsburgh in six?
Right.
Shawnee?
I'm going to go Pittsburgh six. I like that.
Both think it's
Pittsburgh
in six?
By the way, Sean, I would probably be taking Nashville if Ryan Johansson was healthy.
I would still go Pittsburgh. Just because they've been there, they got the experience, and I don't think we're going to see a more motivated Sidney Crosby wanting to go back-to-back, cement that legacy as one of the greatest. Evgeny Malkin playing like a war horse right now.
I hate to disagree with both you gentlemen, but I have the Predators in six.
Nice.
I think that there's something magical about this Nashville
Predators.
Well,
you took the Ducks last round, so you might as well take the Predators this round.
There's something magical about this Nashville Predators team, and I think it's going to be a hell of a Stanley Cup final regardless it is.
I wouldn't be shocked if they won, but you know Pekka-Rinne is going to have to get at least a couple shutouts in the series for that to happen.
Probably. He's going to have to steal some games because I don't know that Nashville's going to have the offense to be able to keep up with the Penguins if they get it going.
Something else to mention, Drew.
Yeah.
Mike Fisher is actually the only player that has Stanley Cup final experience in five games.
Back with the Senators.
With the Senators. Aside from that, they have no Stanley Cup final experience.
The Penguins, of course, have a ton of it, having won and been to the Cup multiple times. When we come back, Willie Donick is the Nashville Predators play-by-play broadcaster. He joins us to talk more about the Stanley Cup final from the Preds' perspective. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, hour number two, coming up next on TSN 1290. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mundell, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. Facebook.com/Illegal Curve if that's your social media platform of choice. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program a very good friend of ours, Willie Donick. Willie is the Nashville Predators play-by-play broadcaster. Willie, good morning, and thanks very much for doing this.
Hey, great to be back with you guys.
Our pleasure.
I think I'm a good fit on the illegal curve, because when I was playing a lot of floor hockey growing up in New York, I definitely, with the plastic sticks, used to get the illegal curve. It worked very well. I had a good rising wrist shot with those hollow plastic orange pucks we used to play with.
Well, you know, Willie, we were always disappointed when the NHL took that rule out of the rule book. There is no longer, of course, an illegal curve penalty in the league. So, you know, no, we might have to change the name of the show. We've been contemplating doing that. But so far, we're going to stick with the current name.
Well, the Predators have a great experience with the illegal curve. Barry Trotz used to find people out ahead of time, and he was sure. He would make sure his bench had no illegal sticks back in the day. And he nailed, I think, Jaromir Jagr one time. And he nailed Ilya Kovalchuk one time. And Kovalchuk, playing for the Thrashers, by the time the referee got to the bench, one of the players on the Thrashers grabbed all of his sticks and ran back into the locker room. And so they couldn't find the stick that they were looking for.
That's a hell of a way to break a rule. In that case, yeah. Just run and hide like a kid trying to.
I'm sure he wasn't guilty. I'm sure they just did that for fun.
Yeah, just being cautious. Cautious is all that, you know. Prudently cautious is what that's called, I think. Anyways, Willie, we of course brought you on to talk about the Stanley Cup Finals and the Western Conference Finals. The Preds finally advancing for the first time in their history to the final. It starts Monday in Pittsburgh. You know, the team obviously clinched. It'll be a week between games, having clinched earlier this week, winning Game 6 on home ice. What has the team been up to in the last week? Sort of resting and getting, you know, trying to keep their legs under them? Are they ready to go? Have they been champing at the bit for this entire week, ready to find out who their opponent is and finally get this cup underway?
You know, it's worked pretty well in each round. So I think it's not that different from what they have done in the last couple of rounds in preparation. They've had a chance to regroup each time, so they've made use of the time. With the rest, they've been able to practice once or twice just on their own systems, in a couple of cases before they even knew who they were going to play. So I think the routine has not changed a whole lot. The important thing has been, especially for two key players, Mike Fisher and Craig Smith, to have a few more days to rest and hopefully recoup. You'd love to have both of those guys available when this series starts.
Willie, is it safe to say that Colton Sissons might be the most important forward for the Predators in this Stanley Cup final?
You know, you could make that argument. I think for sure they're going to rely heavily on Philip Forsberg, the obvious. But outside of the obvious, Colton Sissons has been taking on enormous responsibility along with Callie Yarncroke. But Yarncroke was already taking a lot. So, yes, I think Sissons has gone from a role player to a guy that they're going to count on, especially against that deep unit of centers that the Penguins have.
Willie, I'm curious. You look at a guy like James Neal. Is he a guy that gets kind of motivated going up against his former team in the Pittsburgh Penguins, or is he just a guy that approaches this series just like any other team he's going to be going up against?
You know, I was actually a little surprised to hear his quote. He said there is a little extra motivation playing the Penguins, but I think he's probably just using that to psych himself up. I think he is a guy that plays hard all the time. His goal scoring is very streaky. He's a guy that is a game-breaking type of goal scorer. When he's on, the goals just come in bunches, and certainly this would be a great time for the Predators to get him in a scoring wave. He's had a few good games during the playoffs. He's played very hard-nosed. And, of course, when you're down a guy like Ryan Johansson, you need all of your other skilled players to be able to find that scoring touch, especially in this time where it seems to be the longer you go in the playoffs, the harder it is to score.
Willie Donick, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Willie is the Nashville Predators play-by-play broadcaster. Willie, goaltending is obviously, each and every series, it's a key battle. This one is no different. Pekka Rinne, who's been fantastic during the playoffs, against Matt Murray, who's also been fantastic since he returned from injury. You know, Rinne, this is his ninth year, really, as the full-time starter for the Predators. Just how important, how much does this cup final mean to him? It's a guy who's always been, for a while, thought of as one of the top goalies in the league, maybe had a little bit of a dip the last few seasons, has strongly bounced back this year with that great defense in front of him. Just how important, how much does this cup final mean to Pekka Rinne and his legacy as a starting goaltender in the NHL?
I think it means a lot. There's no getting around it, and he would probably tell you that. He's been fighting for this for a long time. He is, number one of the most respected guys that this franchise has ever had. Everybody just admires what he's all about because of his makeup. He's friendly to everybody, but he's also one of the best competitors you'll ever see. He's one of the hardest workers that you'll find out. Every time that they practice or they do the conditioning drills in training camp, he always scores at the highest. He's an incredible athlete. He sets the example for everybody. He's now been on this team longer than anybody else. So there is so much behind Pecorine in support, and they want to do. Everybody wants to do well for him, and he's you know, he's got that same reciprocity. He wants to do well for this franchise, his teammates, and his fan base.
Willie, we know that the only Predators player that has Stanley Cup final experience is Mike Fisher with the five games, but do you think enough people are talking about Peter Laviolette and all of his Stanley Cup final experience?
You know, I think Peter Laviolette, number one, he tries not to put any attention on himself. And so it's interesting, in this market in Nashville, it's taken a while to get to know Peter Laviolette because he kind of wants it that way. He wants all the attention on his players. He likes to stay behind the scenes. And Barry Trotz was such a huge personality, that was a guy that was so willing to communicate with everybody. That was really instrumental in the early years of the franchise, to have a coach that was willing to tell stories, that was willing to explain things to people that really weren't understanding. So Peter Laviolette in this new era is a very different type of coach, but he's a very effective coach. And I think now, the way he has pushed buttons in this playoff run in particular, and it really goes back to last year, I think the appreciation for what he does well is really coming out now, and the fan base is really now understanding what Peter Laviolette's all about. He's done an incredible job.
Willie, we talked briefly just about the Nashville defense and just how unbelievable they've been as a unit. Here in Winnipeg, being in the Central Division, we've had a healthy dose of that defense over the years. But for those that don't get to watch the Predators, you know, as regularly as we do, is the league kind of finally seeing just how elite this D-Corps is? And have they even taken a step further in this postseason as a unit?
I think they've been outstanding. And I think Yannick Weber and Matt Irwin are a little bit underappreciated for a third pair. Those guys have played great for a third pair to help the top four do even better. But I completely agree. You know, up in Canada, of course, the PK Subban story has become something that is getting almost daily attention, especially with the Canadians out and the Predators doing so well and everybody reflecting back on that trade, especially those that are involved with Montreal so much. It's been kind of amusing to watch. And I feel bad for Shea Weber in some ways because sometimes I think his strengths are so underappreciated because his game is so different than P.K. Subban. But what I like is guys like Ryan Ellis and Matthias Ekholm, who any Winnipeg Jets fan would know. They've been watching those guys progress for the last three seasons or four seasons, really since the Jets came back into the league. Those guys have blossomed. People already knew about Roman Josi to a degree. But it's great to see those guys hit the spotlight because those guys are really the backbone. They're the engine drivers of the team. And I think that's the biggest reason why they've been able to withstand some injuries at forward and still be able to generate enough offense, because they're defending well, but those guys also transition the Predators to the other end of the ice for scoring chances.
Willie Donick, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Willie is the play-by-play broadcast for the... Pardon me, play-by-play broadcaster, easy for me to say, for the Nashville Predators. Willie, you know, last series, the Ducks, you know, they're certainly a more physical team. The Penguins, they were playing the Sens, and we heard so much about them wanting to keep things tight, checking and everything else. These are two fast teams that are going to be competing for the Stanley Cup Final, the Penguins and the Predators. Not a ton of physicality on either side, but a lot of speed. Is this really going to be a tremendously fast Stanley Cup Final from your perspective? Do you expect to see a fair bit of run and gun, given that's how both teams generally like to play?
I think the speed will be out there, no question. Now, run and gun, I don't know that the Predators want to play run and gun with the Penguins. They are such a good team, explosively offensive. You know, they average, 3.3 four goals per game in the regular season, still averaging over three in the postseason. I think the Predators are going to put their faster skaters on the ice. I think their lineup will look more like it did in round one against Chicago. Of course, you've lost two engine drivers up front with Johansson out and Kevin Fiala out, who was really starting to blossom. He's got a great speed element to his game. But I think you might see a couple adjustments in Peter Laviolette's lineup to get mobile skaters in there, because the Penguins are so good from top to bottom in their lineup. But I think the Predators will also be careful. I think the phrase they used a lot out of their locker room against Chicago was, it's not what you get, it's what you give up. And I think that principle is going to be there for the Penguins. I think they're going to believe, because of their defensemen and because of the way they go about it, that they'll get some offensive chances if they play their game. But the key is not to give up odd man rushes and really good looks for the Penguins, because you will get burned if you do that.
Willie, last question for you here. The Predators, of course, have only had one general manager in their history. That, of course, is David Poile. Does anybody deserve a Stanley Cup championship more than David Poile?
Well, he's a guy that I think if you're around him every day, and, of course, I've been around. I was a fledgling, you know, broadcaster, a sports broadcaster when the team got here. I had never really been involved with any kind of hockey team. I was a basketball and baseball player at the college level in town doing sports talk radio when the team came. And I can remember being at David Poile's press conference. He was like the second employee of the team. They hired a president named Jack Diller. He was the first employee. And then Jack Diller turned and hired David Poile and on down the line. So he has literally built everything from scratch. And he survived all of the ups and downs. He's had to break it down and build it back up a couple of times, a couple of lockouts. And so it's a great story. There's no question. I mean, and he's got a huge amount of history, as you guys know, before he ever got to Nashville with Washington and other places. His dad is an NHL Hall of Famer. So, man, it would be something to see him win a cup, because he wants it so badly. But he's always tried to do it the right way. He's a guy that has built teams with character in mind. He's built it his way. And so it would be really something to see him raise the cup.
Willie Donick is the Nashville Predators play-by-play broadcaster. The fun gets underway starting on Monday night, and I think it's safe to say that Music City is going to be pretty lit when the series returns there for games 3 and 4. Not that the buzz won't be strong for games 1 and 2 as well. Willie, appreciate your time. Enjoy this ride. I'm sure it's going to be a hell of a fun couple weeks for you.
Can't wait, guys. It has really been a fun ride, and I think it's going to go to another level when the series comes back to Nashville. We're heading out to Pittsburgh today, and so we'll see what happens.
Travel safe, Willie. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll discuss the Winnipeg Jets, their UFAs, their RFAs. Who's a priority? Do you expect any consternation when it comes to negotiating contracts with any of these gentlemen? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Lowry's on it. Lowry drives into the front of the net, safe. Rebound! Postma scores! Paul Postma drills it from the line. Catches the top corner, and Paul Postma with his first of the year. Jets have tied the game 2-2.
Paul Postma scoring his lone goal on the season. That came later in the season in a game in Pittsburgh. That was that dramatic game with Malkin's hit on Wheeler and all sorts of shenanigans that happened in that game. One of the better games in this previous Jets season. The reason we play the audio of Postma, he's an unrestricted free agent for the Winnipeg Jets. We'll spend this segment talking about the Jets' UFAs and RFAs. Jets only really have two UFAs of note. I mean, we know Andre Pavlik, he's UFA, but he's not coming back. That's pretty clear. Postma UFA, Chris Thorburn, a heart and soul kind of guy, probably at the end of his career. He's also a UFA. Of the two, Postma or Thorburn, do you expect Postma to be the one who is more likely to return to the Jets for this coming season?
Yeah, I would say Paul Postma, and you guys know I'm the biggest Thorburn fan, but it is possible that he does get one more contract. But it's also possible that he has played his last year with the Jets. But, you know, Paul Postma is a guy that you know, doesn't get a lot of attention here in Winnipeg. And he played the majority of the games. I think he was around 65 games for the Jets this year. And I thought he was pretty solid on that third pair. And when the Jets had some injuries towards the end of the season, he even played at times on the second pair. So I would have no problem with the Jets, you know, giving Postma a 1 or 2 year deal. And, you know, Postma's obviously a guy that's not going to be a top pairing defenseman or a top four defenseman. He's going to kind of be that seventh or eighth defenseman, right, Drew? So if Postma is going to be signed and he is going to play that role, kind of similar to like Adam Pardy a couple of years back, where he's a guy that, you know, gets inserted into the lineup when there's an injury, kind of plays, you know, 40 games, 50 games, something like that. I'd have no problem with that. And, you know, the bigger issue for me, and I've talked about this many times if you've listened to the show, is the Jets do have a big need for a top pairing left side defenseman, top four left side defenseman. Josh Morrissey has emerged.
his brother Jeff is also a hell of a player.
Yeah, Jeff Morrissey's a good player too. Yeah. Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba, guys, is clearly the top pair for the Jets now. And you know, I've talked about it as well. Toby Enstrom to me is just not a top four defenseman. The Jets need an upgrade. But yeah, I would have no problem if Postma gets a 1 or 2 year deal.
He played the most games of his career last season with 65. And I was a guy who, you know, I think it speaks to, you know, I'm no huge fan of Paul Postma. He's clearly just a depth defenseman. But I think it speaks to the lack of defensive prospects for the Jets that, you know, they almost need to bring back Paul Postma, because if you subtract him from the roster, it's just another hole you have to fill.
Well, and he's also a right shot defenseman, and the Jets are better on the right side, right, Drew? So, I mean, when you talk about Jets prospects in the system, so you're talking about Logan Stanley, you're talking about Sammy Niku, who they recently signed, right? But these guys are a couple of years away, right? Mm-hmm. Sammy Niku needs some seasoning in the American Hockey League, and Logan Stanley also needs some seasoning in the American Hockey League. So right now, the best bet for the Jets is to acquire a defenseman via trade or via free agency.
Sure, that's talking about the top four, which I agree with you. They certainly need somebody on the left side there. But just, you know, we remember they go through so many defensemen in the course of a season that you really do need 8, 7, 8, 9, even sort of caliber NHL defensemen just to last through an 82-game regular season. So with that in mind, that's why I wouldn't be surprised if they were to re-sign Paul Postma. I mean, maybe he gets a bit of a bump on his salary. Last year he was making $887,000. So maybe he gets, you know, a 2-year deal.
Right.
You know, because that's been Kevin Cheveldayoff's MO.
He might get a 2-way contract.
I think he gets a 1-way deal, but Kevin Cheveldayoff.
Well, I'm just saying, I mean, that's an option.
Also an
it's
option.
It's probably going to be a 1-year deal.
Well, but pardon Kevin me, Cheveldayoff's MO has been to, you know, for those sort of bottom of the roster guys.
By the way, you also have Mark Stewart on the books for another year.
Right. You have Mark Stewart there, too. But, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff's MO has been to sign sort of your bottom of the roster guys to very affordable, very reasonable 2-year contracts.
He's you're looking probably at a 1-year, $1 million contract, right, Drew?
Yeah, maybe. Or I could see him going 2 years and maybe, you know, $1.8 million.
Yeah, sure.
Give him an extra year of guarantee and take a little bit off the top in terms of the salary cap hit. That sort of has been Kevin Cheveldayoff's, the way he's been going about business with a lot of those bottom of the roster guys.
Yeah, and the more important move to come for Kevin Cheveldayoff is Jacob Trouba's future, right? He's got 1 year, 1 year left, and he's an RFA next summer, right? So are you going to sign him July 1st, or are you going to wait until the end of next year, right? That's the bigger move coming up for the Jets. And then obviously Josh Morrissey's going to need a new contract eventually too.
Well, those are certainly huge decisions that have to be made, and Trouba needs to sort of either commit to the city of Winnipeg or tell the Jets, no, we're done, and, you know, I'm hitting UFA status and I'm out. And so the Jets have to deal with that when they find out from Jacob Trouba what his desire really is. We know what his desire was last season. Didn't come to fruition for him. In terms of RFAs, restricted free agents, the Jets have 5 of them. Andrew Kopp, Marco Dano, Brandon Tanev, Ben Chiarot, and Connor Hellebuck. Of those 5, Tanev, Chiarot, and Hellebuck are all arbitration eligible. You know, do you expect any sort of difficulties here in terms of negotiations? It's just pretty cut and dry what these guys can ask for given their track records.
Yeah, I mean, we know, guys, that the Jets are going to protect Connor Hellebuck, in the expansion draft, and they're going to sign him to another contract, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, you can scratch that one off the list right away. Brandon Tanev, to me, is an interesting one, right? Because they signed him to a one-year deal out of college, mm-hmm. And he was really good in preseason, but he struggled at times, and it ended up going down to the Manitoba Moose. So he's a guy that potentially gets a two-way contract. I'm not saying that he does, but I think there's a potential for that. He could also obviously get the one-way contract. But, I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see, for me, more so who they protect in the expansion draft. We've talked about it a lot, right?
And,
you know, when you talk about Andrew Kopp, he's a guy that can be exposed in the expansion draft. I don't think they will. I really like Andrew Kopp's
game.
You
don't think they will expose him?
No.
Well, how do you protect him unless you get Toby Enstrom to waive his no move clause?
You can protect well, that's true. I mean, I guess they will protect Andrew Kopp then, but
no, won't protect him.
Won't protect him. Yeah. Expose him, sorry.
That's right.
And that's especially,
I'm here to help.
That's especially the case if they go with option two, right?
Well, if they have to go with the 4D. I mean, if
they protect 4D, I think Adam Lowry's the guy they protect as the fourth forward.
Over Matthew Perreault.
Yeah.
Where you go with Wheeler, with Scheifele, and with
Little
and with Lowry over Perreault. And that's of course the big offseason question that has been bandied about. Do they go to Toby Enstrom, ask him to waive his no move clause? If they do and he agrees to do that, it certainly opens up a lot of flexibility for the Jets, because then they can protect their seven forwards. But it's one of those unknowns up until, you know, another, you know, less than a month from now, about the next, you know, 3 weeks. You know, we're going to find out more, of course, because the expansion draft happens simultaneous with the NHL awards ceremony in Vegas right before the NHL draft in Chicago. So once the Cup final hits, and once the Cup, you know, the Stanley Cup is awarded, that's when everyone hits the ground running, and it's going to be a real chaotic sort of 2.5 week period there for the NHL. It's going to be, I think, unlike anything we've seen before. It's going to be as chaotic and hectic as you can imagine.
And that's why expansion draft aside, I mean, the Jets want to sign all of these players, right? They don't want to lose any of these players. It's not like any of these players are coming off of bad years. Brandon Tanev, that was his first pro year, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you expected there to be some struggles, and he was a guy that you knew was going to play for the most part on the fourth line, right? So Andrew Kopp is a guy that I think, you know, he has limited offensive upside. But for me, I mean, if Andrew Kopp is on your fourth line, I have no problem with that. And he can even play on the third line if he needs to. At times, we even saw him playing with Scheifele and Wheeler.
Yeah, he showed
right?
that versatility this year for sure. I'm able to put up some points playing on a top line as well. So he showed his versatility for sure.
Marco Dano is an interesting one to me, because Marco Dano, he has offensive upside, but he hasn't really shown it in any type of consistent way, right? Mm-hmm. We've seen flashes of it. And obviously, he came over in the Andrew Ladd trade from Chicago. But for me, Marco Dano, where does he fit in, right? Because you have Kyle Connor and Jack Roslovic waiting in the wings in the American Hockey League. And Marco Dano, if you think about it, is kind of taking up one of those spots that either Connor or Roslovic could take up. So for me, I'm not sure how Marco Dano fits into the long-term plans.
Well, he's getting close to a sort of to needing one of those prove-it seasons where he takes that next step forward as a consistent regular NHLer. I mean, he's a darling of the analytics community. They like all of his you know, Corsi and all of his underlying numbers.
Drew, I'm pretty sure I'm a darling of the analytics community.
I'm pretty sure you're the opposite of a darling of the analytics community.
Is Scott Darling a darling of the analytics community?
I think he's a darling of the Darling family after signing that big free agent contract. I'm not sure how the analytics community feels about his goaltending numbers. Regardless, though, I mean, Marco Dano is a guy who, you know, shouldn't be, you know, can't ask for a lot in terms of in free agency and as a restricted free agent, because he hasn't been able to prove it in terms of his on-ice performance. But that's a guy who the Jets would love to see take another step forward and become a regular NHLer.
Right, and when you're talking about Marco Dano and Andrew Kopp, these are bottom six forwards, right? And so I can't see them getting more than a 2 or 3 year contract.
Well, it all depends on sort of what they want to do. Do they want to sign a shorter term contract and say, we're going to be able to outplay this contract and then get rewarded later on? Or do they want the guarantee, the certainty of a longer term deal?
I just don't think the Jets would give either of these players a long term contract.
I'm not saying anything longer than 3 years. I'm saying, do these guys want to go for a one-year contract, have a great season, and then say you're gonna have to pay us next year?
Maybe you give Kopp 3 years, but I'm not giving Marco Dano 3 years. What has he shown to give him 3 years?
Nothing. I wouldn't give him it either. Anyways, all these will be answered through the course of the offseason. It's been quiet thus far. I think it's about to pick up as we enter June, and then the next 6 or so weeks are going to be busy in Winnipeg Jets camp. When we come back, Mark Seidel of the North American Central Scouting Service joins us. We start our look at the NHL draft with that coming up in Chicago later on in June. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.